thing is that you sign up for it. You know, you can be a winner and not win the competition. It just shows your personality. If you're an asshole in real life, it's only going to be heightened on a television show. That's just how it is. If you're a team player or you're a good person, it usually translates. They can't create that shit. But I do think that that's the risk you take. You never hear anybody complain, oh, God, they never give credit where credit's due. So they got to take some responsibility.
Everyone knows that Bianca Del Rio can read a bitch. But did you know this bitch could write? As if she wasn't busy enough with her comedy career and her long-awaited She-Larious sequel, Hurricane Bianca 2 from Russia with Hate. Bianca's back with a new book, Blame It on Bianca Del Rio, the expert on nothing with an opinion on everything. The only self-help book, she says, will help raise the rate of suicide.
Today, Bianca Del Rio joins us to give us a sneak peek at her new book, What She Thinks of the Queens from RuPaul's Drag Race Season 10, Working with Joan Rivers, and that viral moment when an audience member told her to be more respectful.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Brian Sweeney.
And this is Feast of Fun. Feast of Fun is made possible because of generous support of fierce, fabulous people like you. Listen to past episodes with Bianca Del Rio, Adore Delano, and Courtney Act, and many other extraordinary artists by becoming a member and ensuring the future of this podcast at feastoffun.com/plus. Can you hear it? Everything good?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hello?
Hello, is this Bianca Del Rio?
Yes, it's me. How are you?
Hi, it's Fausto Fernos.
Hello, hello.
And hi, it's me, Brian Sweeney, who you don't know. Hello.
Hi, Brian.
Oh,
nice introduction.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You know, Bianca, I just want to remind you, the Latino community pays your bills still.
No, they can suck my dick. They should be paying their own bills. I don't want to hear it.
Whatever happened to that guy?
You know what? I don't know. And the interesting thing about that, it was right after Drag Race, and we were doing city to city to city each day, and I had no idea anyone even filmed it. So we had this moment, and then I went back to my hotel, passed out, got on a flight the next day, and I didn't know anything about it until the next evening when I was in the next city. And it was all over Facebook. I was like, oh, fuck. But that's the magic of the world we live in now. You know, here's somebody to sit through a whole evening of us there. And then he complains at the end. And then somebody films it. And no idea. So it's quite amusing now, in retrospect.
Well, now you have a new book to read people like him with. Blame It on Bianca Del Rio, the expert on nothing with an opinion on everything. What kind of advice would you give people who want to heckle you during your shows?
Oh, God, just stay the fuck away. Or have a sense of humor. I think we live in a world where people just take everything too fucking seriously. I mean, first of all, I'm the biggest joke there is. So let's look at it from that perspective. I think that you have to know humor if you're a man in a wig in a club at 1 a.m. I think you know that you're the joke. So I would just say that have a sense of humor. I think especially right now in this political climate, we all need to fucking laugh.
Amen, sister. You're known as the hardest working drag queen in show business, and you do so much work back to back.
Well, I'm not an asshole, so I realize this is a golden ticket. And for the past 4.5 years, that's what I look at. I mean, what did I do this for? To sit on my ass and complain about how I don't have anything? So yeah. The point is to go out there and hustle. I think you have to work harder now than you ever have. And I mean, I've done this shit 22 years, so I know a good opportunity when it comes my way. I'm not fucking dumb.
Is that like a family work ethic? Or is that how you were raised?
Not necessarily. I mean, I just think that it's just, you realize in, you know, now, especially with Drag Race in particular, there's over 130,000 queens that have been on the show. So it's like, what did you do this for? You know, to follow the same path as other people? No, I'm not going to do music. I'm not going to make videos. That's just not my thing. And kudos to the girls that are doing it. But for me, it was like going out with an audience and doing stand-up. It's always what I wanted to do. And because the show is, because Drag Race is so popular globally, you have the opportunity to kind of go everywhere. So when people think you're working too quick, it's like, no, well, it's actually been a year since I was there with my show in Australia, or a year, you know, I started this this particular show last June, and which was in Amsterdam. So I'm heading back again, you know, this summer as well to wrap, you know, to wrap up this particular tour. So it all runs in time. Time moves a little quicker than you think.
How much do you write? Are you like constantly writing?
Yeah, notebooks. It's just, I still write things down, which is the crazy thing. And it's whenever there's a hateful thought or an awkward situation or something that happens either on the plane or with some fag in the sky lounge, all of that actually works to my advantage. So you just jot it all down and then you make sense of it later.
Mm.
Joan Rivers was well known for having a huge collection of jokes on index cards, and you're famous for your Rolodex of hate. Do you have to explain people what a Rolodex is today?
Some people do, you know, truly, some people do. I mean, I'm fascinated. We live in a world now, especially with the children of the internet, I like to call them, that are just complete idiots. You know, they're highly amused by the slightest things, but yet they don't know shit. But a Rolodex was something I did have to explain for a hot minute, or their only reference to it was something when I said it on Drag Race, which is really fucking sad. I don't think a lot of people read books anymore. I think that they just look at a picture of a drag queen and go, yes, she's fierce, or some bitch does a split and she's turning the party, but there's no content there. There's no context to anything. So, yes, I did have to explain to quite a few people what it was, you know, but that's just how my brain works. I always refer to it as a Rolodex because when you're faced with a situation, you just thumb through and find out what jokes you have pertaining to that or create new ones.
Is it okay to use the same roasts time and time again? I guess you probably get asked by your audience to do it, like a greatest hits.
Well, it truly depends. I mean, when you're dealing with people one-on-one, obviously it's different. It's more organic. But when you're dealing with a show, you know, you structure a show that's loosely scripted to a certain point, and then there's certain moments where not scripted that I deal with. But if something hateful comes to my mind, sure. But with the traveling show that I do, it's not so much about, there's an audience participation portion that I do at the end of the show where I do question and answer. But before that, it's usually just the scripted material that I've constructed for that particular tour.
You got to work with Joan Rivers. You got in her bed and killed it.
Well,
literally, she died like 2 weeks later.
It wasn't working. I was in an interview, and I was lucky enough to get in there. No, I was always been a huge fan of Miss Rivers, and she was someone, when you live in New York, she was always around. She was always at a premiere opening and for Broadway or any show that was around, and I had done costumes for shows, so I had always gotten tickets on the same night that she would be there, and she was always gracious and always hello, and I mean, aside from the fact that I simply thought she was funnier than fuck, I thoroughly enjoyed her business ethic as well. I mean, here she was in her 80s and still plowing through with the QVC jewelry and doing Fashion Police and doing every gig possible. I mean, her hustle was pretty amazing. So to meet her was, or to sit with her actually, was quite a treat. And we had a blast that day. And then Leanne Rimes came in after me and killed her.
Oh, so no.
Leanne was the last interview. See what happens.
Oh, no. We have Leanne coming up next. Oh, shit. What is... So, are you looking forward to retiring
as a drag
Bianca?
Queen? No,
No, because I feel like... Because you, I was reading an interview with you where you said that you would like to absolutely do just regular stand-up comedy without Bianca or the character. And I also feel like it's a lot of overhead and like time and effort to put in the makeup as opposed to like comedians who can just like roll out of bed and then just get up on a stage and tell jokes or whatever. And it's a lot like when Kiss took their makeup off and and then... They were like, well, this is us now. And then everyone's like, oh, well, we don't like that. We want your makeup. And I don't know. And so they put the makeup back on. And I was just wondering, is there like the part where you're like, I want the real me or whatever to come through completely?
Oh, God, no. I think that's the problem with too many people. They're looking for the real me. No one wants to see that shit. I think, in fairness, I'm not opposed to doing comedy. I've often asked, would you do comedy on drag? And I think that's where those words stem from.
Oh.
I'm not opposed to it. But I also don't think that I would be doing drag for the rest of my life. I'm not going to be an 80-year-old drag queen. That's not my goal either. But I think that everything runs its course. And currently, things are working out for me well. And I always said I would continue to do it as long as the platform is better. 7 years ago, I was in a club doing stuff for four people on a Monday night at 2 a.m. in New York City, where no one was there. So to have the opportunity to get to travel the world and do 2,800-seat theaters for multiple nights, you really start to realize how lucky you are that you run it for what it is. I'm having a good time. So it's elevated. I think the level of it has elevated, which has made me want to work harder and make me enjoy it more. So I'm not opposed to doing it, commenting out of it, but I'm, you know, I think everything has its expiration date, and I think that there'd be that point when I'm like, you know what, I've had a good time, I can move on to something else. But I don't rule it all out, I don't at all.
But it's not goal, that was just they were just trying to find a hook for the article or something?
Not necessarily. And also, well, I always say if I don't wear a wig, I'm called a nasty fag. I wear a wig and they call it hysterical. So it's kind of like the packaging to get away with murder. I mean, you look at someone like Dame Edna, who created several characters, but the only character that really stuck was Dame Edna. And he's done other stuff. You know, Barry Humphries has done other shows where he's played the roles, and they have not been as successful. So sometimes you have to feed the animals what they want.
Well, with the Hurricane Bianca films, that question must come up. It's like, how much do you show of yourself as Roy out of drag versus showing you as Bianca in drag?
Well, first of all, it's not about me. I mean, someone else wrote it, and someone else has put me in this situation. I mean, I'm not a science teacher. I'm not concerned about showing myself. I think that, you know, once you do Drag Race and you realize that 70% of the show you're out of drag, it becomes your reality. But for me, in general, nobody really was interested in what I did outside of drag years before that. I mean, now it's common because of the television show. So I'm not afraid of it or anything. I just think that, you know, work is work, and you do it. If they ask me to dress up like a monkey, I'd dress up like a monkey. It's not that conscious or thinking, oh, I'm showing my vulnerable side. That's all bullshit. That's stupid queens who talk like that. That's not the way I operate.
Peaches Christ got you to dress up as Sheetal Juice.
Yes, yeah, I'll do anything.
That was such a cute look for you.
Oh, she was
a dead body with green hair.
Peaches is lovely. She does a lot of parodies throughout the year, and I was lucky enough to get to do two with her. I got to do Beetlejuice and Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. She's lovely to work with, and creates this fabulous show where she sticks us in, and it's a shitload of fun. It's a nice break from the stuff that I do normally.
But it's good that Peaches like sort of works your strengths into the character.
Oh, completely.
And gives you a lot of room to sort of be Bianca.
Well, what character? I am Beetlejuice, so.
Yeah.
I am Beetlejuice, so it's fine.
So we say Sheetal Juice three times, do you appear?
Sadly. And if you say Miss Vanjie, she disappears. Yeah.
It's so weird that, like, they're using Miss Vanjie over and over again on this season of Drag Race, even though they got rid of her in the beginning.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that I always find it amusing where something comical comes out of somebody's complete, utter devastation. Yeah. She's eliminated, and that's all she's known for. But, you know, that's also how the show works. You never know what's going to catch on, and I'm sure they didn't assume it was going to catch on as much as it has. I'm sure she didn't. I actually met her recently, and she's quite funny. But it's fascinating to see what clicks with the audience and what doesn't. Shocking.
You were Judge Judy again on this season of RuPaul's Drag Race and through the Snatch Game. What were your thoughts on Eureka doing Honey Boo Boo? Because you discouraged her from doing Divine.
Well, I just thought that Honey Boo Boo allowed itself to be a lot funnier in the situation. I think the misconception most tests have, they think, oh, I have a look. Divine is a great look, but it's also a very specific audience. And for instance, I mean, I'm aware of Divine, I'm aware of movies, but not the average person. Once again, we're dealing with people that don't know what a Rolodex is. So I just thought, what would lend itself to the game that would be far more amusing, which obviously was, you know, an inbred child that's in a pageant that eats constantly and makes no sense. That's funny. So I encouraged her to do that. But she did a great job.
So what was your take on this season of Snatch Game? Because I'm seeing, like, you know, even the New York Times is writing about it being somewhat lackluster. That's pretty harsh.
Well, I mean, for me to say, it, my opinion, I mean, really, it doesn't matter what I think. I think that, you know, this is where the show is. The show is popular, more popular than ever, and it's on VH1, and it's gathering a larger audience, and I think that sometimes content may suffer. You know, every show has its ups and downs, and some people are going to like some people or not. I think that's just part of the deal. I also think that, you know, you're dealing with a much younger cast. I mean, you know, really, there's not many people in there that are over 35, and that does create a different dynamic when you have just children that grew up with Drag Race. I mean, a lot of these people started drag when Drag Race began. So it does create different content if you have seasoned players that are on the show as well. But you know how the business works. It's, you know, young, and they think that's the ticket. But something's going to suffer at some point. So if people don't find them that interesting, I think maybe that has something to do with it. I don't cast the show, so I don't know. But, you know, I happen to know a lot of the girls, so it's always great to see people or friends of yours on the show. So you go, that's great that they get the exposure. Now, what kind of exposure they get is sometimes tricky.
Sometimes some queens leave the show with feeling like they're actually, it hurt their careers, or they're, you know, they felt like the competition made them, they put them into such a negative mind space that they feel like it hurt them.
Well, that's usually the people that lose. I mean, they have to blame someone. The thing is that you sign up for it. You know, you can be a winner and not win the competition. It just shows your personality. If you're an asshole in real life, it's only going to be heightened on a television show. I mean, that's just how it is. If you're a team player or you're a good person, it usually translates. They can't create that shit. But I do think that that's the risk you take. You never hear anybody complain, oh, God, they never give credit where credit's due. So they got to take some responsibility.
When we first had you on the podcast, it was with Adore Delano, and I asked you, were you prepared to lose to Courtney Act?
Uh-huh.
And the look you gave me was like, no, I'm not.
Well, no, but also you have to realize those are questions that you deal with. That's the most fascinating thing about the show is, like, you know, we had just filmed the whole season and then we came on the podcast with you. And it's something I had dealt with. I mean, not something I hadn't dealt with before. I had everybody asking that question. What I find so funny is that everybody thinks they know what's going on and they have no fucking clue. So it was amusing to me that you would say that. And no offense, Courtney's fabulous, talented, pretty, and gorgeous.
Sure.
But it's funny sometimes how people think they know the in on everything. And also, you weren't going to get me to fucking budge. That wasn't my job. I signed a contract, you asshole. I wasn't going to give away shit.
Well, you know, we were observing that they had cast somebody who did really well on Australian Idol. And so it was a big challenge. But obviously, like, watching the season, there was no doubt. It was probably the least surprising announcement of a winner of any season ever.
Is Australian Idol straight guys, though? Because Courtney's like a hot,
I mean,
woman.
Australian Idol was anything, and Courtney had auditioned as a guy, Shane. She had auditioned out of drag and didn't get far, and then the next time she auditioned in drag got much further. So it's quite interesting to see what they were interested in. But yeah, no, I just think that, you know, you're also looking at the narrative of the show after it was filmed. You got to remember, when I'm talking to you, I only knew my experiences of how far we filmed. Mm. And that was my take on it. So you're now seeing their version of it, which means the edited version to showcase whoever is going to win or the ups and downs of an individual that you didn't know. I didn't know I was going to win because you just don't know when you're there. You have no idea. I mean, you're filming day after day after day after day, and then you see it on television with everyone else. So you're not privy to any inside information in advance.
You sound very, like, adaptable to everything. It sounds like that you just know when to pick your spots and see where the tide is turning. I don't know if that's the right way, but I wonder, like, you obviously, yes, you won Drag Race, so you became like the star of that season because of whatever, because you won. But say you washed out or you didn't do well, do you think that you could have leaned into whatever it was that got you out, like in the particular thing that just happened with O'Hara?
Eureka O'Hara?
Yeah, like, if she put herself as, like, here, I'm going to do my terrible divine imitation, I feel like people would go nuts, like, if that was what she was going to do in clubs.
You say they were a very forgiving audience in some ways?
Well, I'm just saying, like, because everyone's in on the joke, and people like it when they can make, like, laugh at yourself and stuff, and it feels like if that's what people will be into, then that's, like, where you go. Would you say that you should always pick your spots and see what you're best at or where you can fit in?
Well, I think you need to look at the challenge. The challenge is Snatch Game, and the object is to oddly answer questions as a personality of some sort. But it's a game show, so therefore you're going to be asked a series of questions, and you need to find the proper character that can actually answer the questions in an amusing way. Rue always says, make me laugh. The goal of it is to make them laugh and the contestants, so to speak, that are there to play the game, you know, with Audra McDonald and the model, I forgot her name. But anyway, the goal is to make them laugh and to create a match for the questions that you're asked. So you got to look at it. I mean, with Divine, it's a great look, which drag queens get wrapped up in. Oh, I look just like Divine. I look just like Janet Jackson. I look just like Beyonce. But that doesn't lead to jokes. Name one thing that's funny about Beyonce. I know nothing. You know what I mean? Nothing at all. So it doesn't lend itself to the game. You might be gorgeous as Beyonce. You might be gorgeous as Divine. But it doesn't lead to the challenge. I mean, it's about personality and comedic timing. With Divine, it's such a specific audience that how you make that work. She could have, but I just thought Honey Boo Boo was the better choice. I just assumed no one had done it, and it's also that child is a loose cannon. Basically, it's Trump in a pageant dress. You know, a fat baby that talks nonsense. So that would be funnier for an audience. I assume that was my opinion. And if I had to choose, that's what I would have done. But I'm glad she did it, but she would have to show me a lot harder what she would have done with Divine. I don't think everybody would have gotten it.
This year at DragCon, there's a lot of controversy over fast passes. Like at Disney World, if you don't want to wait in line, for free, you can get a little ticket and go around to the park to the rides that are not as popular, so you always stay busy. For the drag queens, are actually selling more expensive meet and greet packages where they can get a fast pass and not wait in line. And you wrote, "Fast pass, most of you bitches aren't even worth the entrance fee. Who the fuck do you think you are?"
Exactly. I mean, I would say you would have to have a line before you actually ask for fast passes. I mean, let's be serious.
Well, it's Yuhua Hamasaki is the one who started it.
Wait, what?
Yuhua Hamasaki, she was a third eliminated on the show. Is the one who started the concept of fast passes.
Listen, everybody can do whatever they want. Anyone can buy it if they choose to. I just laugh at the connotation that you expect people that have flown there, that have gotten a hotel room, that have paid an entrance fee to get in there, and want their share of taking a photo with some second-rate drag queen, all of us included. You need to consider the fucking source. Be a fucking person and be real. Now you're going to ask for a fast pass, or after people standing in line, they're just going to roll past you like a handicap and get whatever they want. That's not how this works. It's like, you're not that fucking special. You're not Madonna, you dumb cunt. But if some asshole wants to pay it, let him pay it. But I laugh at the people that created the fast pass and now have them on sale because nobody bought them. So keep that in mind.
Well, if I were doing the fast pass, I would just pretend like I had sold them and just stop selling them if they weren't selling.
Well, it's kind of ridiculous because when you think about it, it's, you know, $30 to $40 per girl, per line, for you to go through. Nobody's worth that amount of money. I mean, plus you have to buy merch and then you've got to, that's a bit extreme, mm-hmm. I feel. And I would never do that on that level. I think that's ridiculous.
One of the most common requests that we get doing Cooking with Drag Queens is having you on as a guest.
I don't cook. I mean, unless you want to cook meth, I don't cook at all. So
it's a cooking school. We would teach you how to make something.
Oh, God, I don't want to learn how to cook. If I learn how to cook, then I become common. That's not fun for me.
What were some of your favorite foods growing up in Louisiana?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, Louisiana, it's a lot of food. But what stands out? I mean, the usual stuff, although my eating habits then are completely different now than I was then. But some things I can't resist. I mean, New Orleans also is a drinking town. So for me, I'd rather drink my breakfast than actually eat it. So I think that's where my alcoholic tendencies came from over the years. You've definitely built up a tolerance there because the bars are open 24 hours and you can drink on the street, which is pretty amazing.
I've seen you put away a lot of alcohol with Lady Bunny on stage.
Completely. You have to when you work with her.
You guys have such a great friendship. And a lot of people have asked me, If there's any talk about you and Lady Bunny developing like a web series or a sitcom of some kind?
Well, Bunny and I, we always have a great time. We're together. And actually, I'll be traveling with a show. It'd be Cherry Vine and Bunny. It's called National Treasures, which is a fun opportunity that I get to do with the old gals, people my age. But the prospect of doing something, I mean, obviously I'm in Los Angeles now and Bunny's in New York, and a web series and all that stuff. I mean, I know people that create web content, and it's a huge commitment, as you know, and I don't necessarily have the schedule to do it on a regular basis. And also Bunny's just lazy. So I don't know if that would ever come to fruition, but I do find that it's amusing when people record us together on stage, but I just don't know technically if we can make it happen. We had talked at one point even about doing a radio show, but that became an issue with, once again, my scheduling. I couldn't commit to a particular time and place, you know, every week. So I don't know. It's challenging, but maybe in my old age, when I'm tired of, if she's still alive, maybe I'll retire from traveling and just shack up with Bunny and record that. Live in a house with Bunny.
Did you just pass gas?
Yeah,
it'll probably be like,
but I love her.
It'll be like DragCon, like how Star Trek shows are now, like just the old members just like talking to each other and be like, remember that? And they're like, no.
Completely.
What did you make of Michelle Wolf roasting Republicans, Russia, and the media?
I thought she was brilliant. I had seen her before, and I thought she was very, very funny. And shockingly, I didn't expect what she did, and I thought that was fucking fierce. Because the sad thing is, obviously, we live in a world that's completely insane. But the idea that what she said, even if you take away people laughing, it was all the truth, which, of course, there's always comedy in truth, always. I'm a firm believer in that. But I just thought she did. She was a ballsy bitch, and I loved every fucking minute of it. And I think it's exactly what they deserved. I wish a congressman would stand up and say that as truth, because it's fact, you know? Take away the people laughing. True as fuck. And I just thought, ballsy bitch, bravo to you. I said, she's my new hero. I loved her. I loved every minute of it. I wish it were longer. But I said the same thing when I fucked an Asian. So it's all good.
Your book, Blame It on Bianca Del Rio, The Expert on Nothing with an Opinion on Everything, is probably the only self-help book that will raise the rate of suicide.
Completely.
It's available everywhere.
That's
books
the guarantee.
Are full. That's a guarantee you're going to want to kill yourself after you read the book.
You need to. I already got your money, so die.
Buy it for someone you hate.
Bianca Del Rio, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I'll chat with you soon.
Come on, Cooking with Drag Queens. We'll make you just, it'll be an all cocktail episode.
Oh, perfect. All right, we'll work it out. Thank you so much.
We won't even feed you any food. It'll be all liquids.
Perfect. That's what I enjoy. Thank you.
Take care, Bianca.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bianca Del Rio lives in New York City. Check out her new book, Blame It on Bianca Del Rio, The Expert on Nothing with an Opinion on Everything. Brian Sweeney.
Yes, Mark Phelan.
Your thoughts?
Bianca is, she's great. She knows what to say.
It feels like she has been talking to the press, and actually she has, for the last 4 days back to back.
Yes. It's very fast, too. She gets in all the information.
It's like, hold on a second. I got a question I'd like to ask you, honey.
My question, and I didn't phrase it well, but, like, mm-hmm. Do you know, like, with that Eureka shit, like, I feel like it'd be funny just if like, when she plays clubs, I meant after Drag Race, like, of leaning into... If it's like a traffic accident like that is or whatever, always lean into that part of yourself. So like when you come in, instead of trying to be like, no, I can do this, I feel like give the people, if you give them that, they will allow for a lot more. Hey, like, this is my divine imitation, but understanding, like, this is bad, and everyone knows it's bad, but that's part of why we all are going to enjoy when I do this. And so, like, understanding it. So, like, when you go to see it, it's like, come and see the worst divine imitation, and then do other stuff as well. But as long as it's that, like, that's a hook, because... That's what that person, Eureka, is now going to be famous for in that moment, is what I was wondering. If that's a good move or if not a good move.
Well, the funny thing about drag queens today is that they're all sort of, I wouldn't say brainwashed, but overwhelmed by the type of drag that is represented on RuPaul's Drag Race. And in some ways, I'm really happy that shows like Dragula or even, you know, Cooking with Drag Queens or other, you know, web series that that feature drag queens heavily have an opportunity to showcase a different mindset, a different approach to cross-dressing in terms of comedy and art and performance. And, you know, Too Much is all about lip syncing for your life. It's about death drops. It's about contouring your nose. And it's about hot, big hair. And drag is much more than that. You and I are really lucky because... We sort of got our first taste of show business through the breakthrough show, The Kids in the Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And cross-dressing was a huge component of their comedy at a time when, you know, there was no RuPaul, there was no drag anywhere else on television. And it was really a revolutionary aspect of The Kids in the Hall. And it made me want to become a drag queen and made me think about gender in a very, I think in some ways, a respectful way, because it was not about like ridiculing women. It was about sort of using the cross-dressing aspect to portray a character.
Yeah, it's one of the only sketch shows that is like not, the joke is not that it's a man in a dress. It's there just because... They like they don't speak in this, you know, like funny like women.
Yeah,
it's like me. They're like real characters, yeah. And I feel like that's a big the Kids in the Hall thing of how like they don't call attention to the fact of, like, it's men in dresses. Like, that's has nothing to do with the joke.
There's a little bit component of them, like, getting even with their ex-girlfriends there. You know, like, some of those characters are definitely, like, you know, dressing up as somebody they used to date and sort of be like, I'm so upset at you, you know?
Yeah, and, I mean, Bruce McCullough says that he's, like, with his with the Kathy character that's an imitation of his sister that he does.
And certainly the chicken lady is definitely an exaggeration.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yes, yes. But, yeah, that's mostly because it's just five dudes. So, like, if they want to have a woman character, they had to dress and be in drag. And as it got to bigger production values with the TV show, they were able to...
What do you think, like, moving to CBS kind of killed the Kids in the Hall? Because it was like there was so much money being poured into the show, and it was like it worked better as a sort of cable series?
Kind of, but in Canada, it stayed on the CBC, and they're from Canada. So, like, when it moved to CBS, it was being played at 1:30 a.m. on Saturday night, Sunday morning. So, like, it never got into anything. It was better off as an HBO show, probably. Yeah. But where it really was seen was the Comedy Central reruns. But
well, and the reason I bring up the Kids in the Hall is because, like, for me, it's like drag is just one, you know, one spice in a very big spice rack. It's one color in a very big assortment of things that we can do as artists. And, like, I would, you know, because you're so inspired by the Kids in the Hall, and yet, at the same time, every time I brought up cross-dressing to you, you always give me this look like, are you fucking crazy?
Well, because it's not, because, like, I don't know, it's...
I think if you dressed up in drag, and, you know, even, like, even mildly pulled it off... People would go nuts.
Maybe
that's not where you want to be as a comedian. You're more of a writer. You're more of an intellectual person.
Well, I'm just not sure what the point would be if it's just like for funniness.
Just for fun.
But I would want it to have something. Like, that's my problem with most drag is, like, it's very nothing. It's like, look, I'm in a dress and I have makeup on. Because I like Divine, and that's it. Like, in
fandom is a big component, and I think of Drag Race right now because the show's on television. That's the other thing that kind of bothers me is that, like, all the contestants on this season are all huge fans of the show and huge fans of drag queens. And I would, you know, urge the producers to maybe consider booking somebody who's never watched the show, but is still an interesting drag queen. Or somebody who's just, like, you know, a very unique individual who's not, like, paying tribute to other things. It's difficult because, you know, Snatch Game is basically paying tribute to somebody who exists, a celebrity of some kind.
Yeah, it's a problem with drag, like, cannibalizing itself, and it's no one's fault, but the fact that it's such a huge show and just thing is, like, and just, like, accepted is...
Yeah.
You hear drag queens, like, in their 40s or whatever, being like, drag is transgressive and stuff. And it's like, no, it's not. Like, not anymore. It's just not anymore because we've
moved. It's no more transgressive than folk music is anymore.
Well, I mean, you yes, but it's because, like...
It can be transgressive, but the majority of this stuff isn't. It's Disney World with fast passes.
Just having a man in a dress is no longer enough. Like, that's the problem. Like, just having two men, like, kiss each other on a TV show is no longer enough of... I mean, it is for... I'm not saying no.
Sure, but for these kids, you know, the little teenage girls that go, mommy, 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 I need $10,000 to go, you know, have a photo with Bianca Del Rio mm-hmm. or, you know, Trixie Mattel or whatever. It's like... It's almost like they've become Mickey Mouse or Goofy or Minnie Mouse. They own every single merchandising aspect of the character they created. And so if you do really well on Drag Race, it becomes very lucrative. And so Drag Race now is all about creating this merchandisable character and not necessarily being this, you know, that's why Bianca Del Rio stands far apart from all the other characters because she's not necessarily releasing Bianca Del Rio merchandise or pins. That's not what her thing is about. Her is about being a comedian and performing on stage and making films.
And the fact that she goes, like, off script and is ready when she performs is so different than a lot of drag queens. And it's that type of thing is what separates the people and what makes Bianca still, like, her season was a while ago, and she's still Bianca Del Rio. Like, that's a name amongst names.
Well, one of the funniest thing videos I've ever posted, and I did this, you know, I was just shooting footage of Bianca Del Rio and Lady Bunny hosting, I think it was RuPaul's Drag Race Season 8, a premiere party, and their relationship to each other was really unique and special and something that a lot of people weren't aware of, you know? And so Lady Bunny just kept saying, "When are you to post that on the internet? I want people to see it. Get it." And I was just like, I was a little bit nervous because, you know, I usually don't like to post all of somebody's performance or good chunks of it because I want people to go see it and experience it for themselves. But two of our most viral videos is Lady Bunny and Bianca Del Rio insulting each other in such a really interesting way that it's very different. And I don't know if you get to see this, like when you watch Bianca Del Rio insult an audience member, it feels like the audience member is part of their family. It's not like she's trying to intentionally hurt their feelings or emotions. She's sort of acknowledging the struggles that that person is facing. And it's really great to see, like, Bianca Del Rio, if you ever get a chance to engage somebody who's disabled in the audience, sitting in the front row, you know, in their wheelchair or in their stilts, or, you know, they're visibly have some accessibility issues. And she's just right there lovingly but viciously acknowledging the struggles that they face. And they absolutely, 10 out of 10 times, absolutely love it.
And 10 out of 10?
10 out of 10
all
times.
All of them.
All of them, yeah. And it's something really beautiful to see happen. And it's something that I rarely see any kind of comedian do. You know, it's a very intimate space to create with an audience member that you just don't know who it is. And in a way that she gets away with that is sometimes she just buys the audience member a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of that, like, I just said these really cruel, mean things to you. And at the same time, you're part of my family. You're part of my safe space in some weird, twisted way. Right. And so when she comes on and does an interview with us, like, we're sort of expecting her to be that character on stage, to be sort of insulting and stuff, you know. And she hinted that a little bit of me by calling me an asshole because I said that Courtney Act would win over her, you know. But she's just a very different person in interviews than she is on stage. She's very business oriented. She's very matter of fact. On stage, she's very loose and silly and
loose
and freewheeling, you know. And so it's interesting to see, like, all the different facets of who Bianca Del Rio can be.
And drag is such a live performance. Like, it doesn't translate as well, regardless of, like, Drag Race working. It's the same as, like, improv or stand-up comedy or even live music. Like, the greatest concert you've ever been to, if you're like, "Oh, that was a great concert," and you were there, and then you get, like, a bootleg or whatever, it's never the same. You can't, because that communal spirit of being there and seeing everything live, and it feels like you don't know what's going to happen, and everyone's in it together. It's like going to see a movie on opening night, or it's a horror movie. Like, horror movies, when you go see them on, like, opening night and this crowd is screaming, if you go back to it the next time and you watch it by yourself, it's never the same. You're like, "Oh, this doesn't feel as fresh and real as it once did." And with drag, it's such a thing of being in the place with everyone else and feeling like I'm in a community of all these nerds, which is a big thing of, like, gay culture is such so, like, intertwined in nerd culture, and just because we have all these, like, specific references that we all get, just like Bianca was talking about. And, like, when you go outside and you're like, "Hey, remember Divine and shit?" And people are like, "What?" Because that's most people. They're like, "Oh, well, those are normies." But when you find, like, my people, and that's the same as, like, nerds with, like, Star Trek or whatever it was, and, like, all those conventions and shit, like, that's what all of it is together. And it makes sense why, like, nerds and punks and gays and shit have always found, like, this common ground. And that's what drag is, I feel. is a big part of it.
Well,
and that's the nicest thing I've ever said about drag. So let me walk that back.
Yeah.
Only peaches is good.
You feel like you're very, I don't know where to use the word picky, but you feel like drag's kind of, for the most part, you share the same sentiment with Bianca Del Rio, is that it's over. There's a lot of hype there.
Yeah, it's well, I think it's there's a lot of safeness to it, because, and by that I don't mean the transgressive act of dressing a man dressing as a woman is transgressive in certain parts, not maybe where we live, and for us it's like there's not much transgression because we see so much stuff.
But it's
in
interesting
general, but,
like if you were like a college mascot in a world where college mascots, parts of the world, you would be like shot dead for dressing up as an eagle or a, you know, a alligator.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
But like when I was saying, like, excuse me, seeing two men like kiss and stuff isn't transgressive. It certainly can be. It's that's the big city Chicago boys talking about that. Like, who cares? But like, obviously, like it gives people that can't come out or whatever, it gives them they feel stronger because of that. But what I mean by safe of it is, like what Bianca was saying of how he's always writing in notebooks and jotting stuff down and then trying to make stuff of it and making up new shows. It's not, and I read an interview with Bianca where he said, most people, it's just like they lip sync to Beyonce and that's it. And it's just like, I've seen all this shit so much. And it's, when you just keep seeing the same shit over and over, it feels weird with drag when it's like, well, this is all I have to do. And like, look, I put the makeup on and I have fake boobs and a sparkly dress and that's enough. And it is enough for a lot of people. But when you want more, that's when I think that you go into more stuff like Bianca or Peaches or whatever.
Well, but even Peaches and Bianca hold themselves to the standard where their makeup has to have a certain level of refinement.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't hold myself to that standard. Like I'm much more in art school. They would use the word painterly, right? Where you can see the brush strokes in your face, or mm-hmm. you see the sloppiness is
well,
embraced.
That's like the what is that like Indian art of the of like blank rugs or something? They purposely put in
mistakes.
A mistake so that yeah. you can tell because
it was made by a person.
Yeah, and because without the mistakes, it's a lot like CGI. Special effects there's something about them that are soulless compared to even like Harryhausen like type of
so you
the
think
claymation
like this drag
things.
This drag school of contouring and sort of to the point of being airbrushed, you know, when you look at a person's face, it's so flawless it almost has a risk of being empty.
I feel that way, but I'm fucking almost 40, like I'll be 40 in 2 years, so like that's me. And so like I don't know if that's what like, and so like don't yeah. listen to what I'm saying, like the people, the kids now, like they're the ones.
It's extremely important for a lot of young drag queens who are fans of Drag Race to contour their noses and to have a very pageant aesthetic. You know, Bianca Del Rio, like she won't go out on stage without four sets of eyelashes on her face.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I'm just kind of like, I question whether the audience would feel ripped off or feel cheated if she changed her look. But then again, like Coco Peru, she went and got a different wig one time and the audience was like, no.
Well, you what know? I would recommend, like, if you want to be on Drag Race, then pay attention to what RuPaul and Bianca and all them. But
then you'll just be just like any other queen.
Yeah, if you don't, and you're a young kid, and you're 20 or whatever, younger, like, fucking figure out what you want, because the shit that we're talking about is just, like, 90s shit. Like, we're like, back in the 90s, this was cool, and it's like, you're gonna want something that's cool because you think it's cool, and your generation will figure it out. But, like, For me, I like my old shit. I like 90s music. I like the 90s aesthetic.
I like all kinds of music. I listen to music from 100 years ago, and I listen to music that was created yesterday. You know, it's like my tastes are not tied to a time period.
I only listen to Gregorian chants. That's all I listen to.
I sometimes listen to Gregorian chants with a dance beat.
I only listen to stuff just written on a tablet. I put tablets up to my ear.
We did a whole show about the song Just a Gigolo. And how it went.
I'm just a gigolo.
Gigolo. It changed so many times in the course of 100 years. Like, it was written in 1914.
Louis Prima, though.
Yeah, Louis Prima's
version.
He's
the one who... And what was the lady?
That was his wife.
What's her name?
I forgot her name. Her name, but she was. They got divorced shortly after that.
Oh, because he was a gigolo.
He was. It's like, you know, she had a very deadpan look. They were very much in love, but you know, it's hard to be a couple and to be in showbiz. You know, and
so, enjoy yourself. It's later than you think. Enjoy. That was probably from eating so much pussy. That's how he sounded. Like, he probably ate that pussy so much that she was like, "You ate my pussy way too much, Louis." I gotta go. He's like, "Oh, baby." Blah, 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 blah.
Is it weird during the podcast with just me and Jesse here in the room without Mark?
I'm glad Mark's finally gone. I'm glad we got rid of the dead weight.
Mark, I miss him so much.
All I could feel during all this drag shit. Bianca is just, everyone's just like, "Oh God, I wish Mark was here instead of this,
instead of this
pussy loving straight asshole who has no idea what he's talking about."
Well, that's part of the thing that's interesting, you know, like, and we should definitely take advantage of the fact that Mark's gone to
go through his shit. Mark's coming back, by the way. Mark is not. Mark will be back.
Maybe.
Yeah. Hey.
We don't know.
Well, oh, yeah, I just got a text.
It's a special assignment.
Mark is in specialism. Mark, yes, Mark didn't feel so good after Thanos snapped his fingers and he blew away. Spoiler alert.
He turned into dust. And then people had to inhale that dust.
Remember
they
when
got high on it.
Thanos was like, "You should have went for the head." Oh, man. What a good movie. Infinity War.
You know, I always say that Ornatia, the head that sits on top of Vivacious, is powered by two Infinity Stones.
Mm.
The truth and fierceness.
Ooh, very good. Yeah, I wonder... See, that's cool. Like, there should be a fucking drag Thanos. Like, think of how awesome that would be.
Oh, it's coming, honey.
It better be.
She's going to have the testicle chin and everything.
And, like, yeah.
You know, those Thanos gloves are super fucking expensive. They're, like, $300, and they're all sold out, and they haven't even manufactured them yet.
You can get different kinds. Like, there's one that's just, like, rubber. You can get one. I know that they used to sell them before the movie came out. They're probably...
Yeah.
But they used to... They have cooking oven mitts that were the Infinity Gauntlet.
You can make half of the cookies disappear.
See, and like, that's a thing. Like, only like nerds knew what that was. So like, people would like post pictures of themselves with an Infinity Gauntlet cooking mitt, and I'd be like, "Fuck yeah, like that's my people." But now it's like Drag Race. Like, you don't know. Like, like if they're like, "Oh, I love Bianca Del Rio," it's like, okay, let's see, which type of person is this? Like, is this just one of these like normies, or is it a person that I could like take into the bathroom and just butt fuck? It's like when you used to, like, tapping your foot. Now you don't know. We're losing ground.
Well, do you feel like something's lost because a lot of this kind of community oriented cultures now belongs to everybody?
Oh, it is, but that's also kind of like,
isn't that a good thing?
I mean, it's good and bad. It's more it's bittersweet. Like, it's not, it's neither. It's, you know, it's as the old guard dies, like the new people will rise up, they'll come up with their own shit, and like, now people like watch YouTube, and so like they know like YouTube people, and they have their own little group or their Patreons or whatever the hell. Like, everyone's got their own thing, and capitalism will always try to exploit whatever they can. And we wanted this, like we always, but it's kind of like
fighting for this. I've been fighting for, you know, I've been doing this podcast for 14 years. I was doing a cable access show for 5, you know. Like, I know what David Letterman was going through the last couple of years of his show. It was just kind of like, we have seen so many, like, you just get to a certain point, and you just, like, see stars rise and fall. You see people come in and out of your life. And
he was just fucking interns, too, in that little room.
I've never had sex with any interns from the show.
Oh, well, you should start.
But I had the opportunity to.
Why didn't you? Because Mark was already filling them up. There was nowhere for you to go.
No, because it was just like, it would be the wrong thing to do. You know, it's like people came to you for help, for education, and you're like, and you know, and sometimes when somebody wants sex from you, it's not the right thing to give them. You know, it's like they're wanting that because they don't know how other ways to relate to you as a person.
Oh, well, I'd say help that come out of the balls.
But, you know, it's not the worst thing. I don't think it's the worst thing you can do. I think, you know, a rich, powerful man like David Letterman having sex with his intern is a very different dynamic than, say, you know, two gay men who are about the same age.
Just spit roasting.
Who are both volunteering for something.
I thought you meant you and Mark. Yeah. The two gay men just spit roasting an intern.
But I get asked that a lot. Like, people ask me all the time, did you have sex with that guest? Or the people ask me if I'm having sex with you.
Oh, God. I hope you
and
don't.
And I'm like, no.
Don't let anyone know. A brother that gets fucked
a brother,
by Fausto
lover,
and Mark.
Maybe both.
Yeah, but there's so much brother. Wait, is there brother porn? No, I guess it's probably just stepfather and stepson.
There's this crazy genre of porn where there's like twins.
We
loved each other throughout life, but we realized we were much more than just in love with each other. We were in lust.
There was,
and I was like, so the question is, you have a twin and you're both really attractive people. What if somebody said, you know, Brian, I'll give you like, you know, $100,000 for you to fuck your twin in the ass.
I mean, it depends where I am.
And both of you guys are cool with it.
If we're both cool with it, then yes,
but
I'm apparently
like,
doing
gonna,
it.
It's going to change your relationship.
Oh, you think? We're going straight to just butt fucking. I don't know. I
this
wonder
is what these guys are going through. These Eastern European, and these are guys who are coming from abject poverty. You know, in far off
is that
parts
a country
of the world.
In Eastern Europe. I'm from abject poverty.
Poverty.
After the wall fell, abject poverty came up.
I mean, I don't know if I could do it. You
well,
know,
there was the Stevens sisters, Whitney and Brittany. That was straight porn. And they used to, like, lick each other's pussies and stuff. But they never were able to. They were, like, able to, like, suck each other's titties, I think. But there is video of them, like, kind of, like, fingering and stuff. But, like, I don't know. Like, maybe if $100,000, I mean, there is a price. Everyone has a price where you do it. I don't know.
But I don't know. It's like, I guess the question is, like, if you get paid a certain amount of money, then the money is going to be gone afterwards. And then you're left with this, like, broken relationship or a relationship that's, you're going to miss the relationship you had.
Yeah, but you can buy, like, medicine and stuff. You don't need to think
Twizzlers?
About it. Yeah, buy Twizzlers.
And eat candy because you got paid $100,000 to have sex with your twin, and now you guys don't want to talk to each other anymore.
Well, who cares? Yeah.
Money
is more important.
There's some, you know, the Hamburger Mary's chain is run by two identical twins, who are both attractive men outside, and they're also working drag queens as well.
They're both gay?
Yeah. Mm. And they're really, really nice. And every time I'm like, every now and then, like I'm hanging out with them, I'm actually friends with them, Brandon and Ashley. And, you know, they say that's one of the most common things they get asked about is like, would they make out with each other? With it, like sexualizing their relationship. And they're just like, it's just because I look a lot like my brother doesn't mean we're going to have sex with each other.
Yeah, but there is something because of the taboo, like,
Twins is another level, right? It's a copy of ourselves, but it's not really a copy.
Yeah, but lesbian twins, I would watch. I would definitely watch that and jerk it.
But when I was 18 years old, one thing that I used to do as a drag queen, I used to dress my younger sister as me, and then have a scene where I, out of drag, am interacting with myself in drag on stage. And I put on so much makeup on her that it actually, people were really freaked out by it. Like, they were just like going, is this like, was the person that I was seeing earlier not Fausto all along?
Oh,
or,
well,
you know, like, because it's one thing if you see a movie, you see, you think, oh, this is just CGI, right? The actor playing like divine or a good editing. But when you see it in theater, then you start thinking like the person you were seeing, because you don't really know them. You start thinking that person that you were seeing wasn't really the person you thought it was.
Would you have a three-way with your sister?
No.
Like, but a
but
guy.
We almost had a baby. Mark and I, you know, gave sperm to my sister so we could have a child together. And that didn't work out. Sadly enough, you know, and like I had dreams for a long time. I had dreams that like, you know, I was a father and I had a son and I would talk to the son.
I dreamed a dream.
I dream a dream.
That my husband would come in my sister. But now that dream is dead.
It's such a freaky world we live in. But yeah, I was like giving my sister like hormone injections, you know, with a needle. And we were like going, we were getting up, like we were staying in a hotel and trying to pretend like we were, you know, like Mark and my sister were a couple and going to this like Christian fertility clinic because they were not cool with, you know, a sperm donor who wasn't like married to my sister and stuff. So
you could have like blew Mark and then spit the cum in your sister's vagina. And then we could have like sold that. That would have been a great porn. And then we could show it to the baby later on and be like, this is how you were born. This is love. This is what love is.
I went to a park yesterday. I took Jesse. And it's in front of an elementary school, and there was these two little British kids. They were like,
oh no, where's this story going?
Blonde.
Oh no.
With bright blue eyes.
Oh, Mark, you gotta get back here. Fausto's getting into some crazy
and like,
shit.
Sir, can we play with your dog? Can we play with your puppy? And I was like, sure, but be gentle with him, you know, and stuff.
And then you whipped it out. And they were like, no,
your real puppy, son.
And Jesse was like really, really good with those two kids, you know. And the father comes over and I was just all the time I'm thinking is like, this is like a scene from Village of the Damned or like Children of the Corn, you know,
mm-hmm.
where the kids are all like freaky and weird. And, you know,
so were they freaky and weird?
They were like alien. They look exactly like kids from Village of the Damned. I was like, oh, are you guys twins and stuff? And they're like, no, that's my sister.
And they're like, what do you guys think about twin porn? Would you do it for $100,000? And then their dad came and they're like, what's going on here?
No, the little kids, like, for a good 15 minutes were, like, throwing a ball with Jesse. And Jesse was, like, loving them. He's such a good daddy dog.
He's really daddy.
Sweet. He's a very sweet little puppy and stuff, but I just kept thinking of like Village of the Damned, like, and the father who didn't have a British accent, he's like, oh, their mother has gone away. You know, he was exasperated.
I really need the touch of another man.
And I was just like, they're going to make these kids are like going to make their dad choke himself to death, like in that movie, you know, like,
oh,
you know what I say? Oh, take a gun and blow himself in the head like,
with like breath play.
Yeah.
Sex. Choke yourself, daddy.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and make everything dirty.
You're so raunchy today, Brian.
Well, Bianca brings
got
it
you,
out of
got
me.
Got you horny. Brink you actually so horny. Met Peaches Christ in person, finally.
I did.
We didn't talk about that last time.
I thought we did.
No, we didn't. We touched on it, but you didn't. What did you guys talk about? Because you were talking for a good like 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, we talked about
now,
twin
Peaches
porn. We talked about murdering Mark and telling you that he had to leave. Oops.
Peaches said to me, he's like, did Brian like the show? He just kept like crossing his arms and like had this like angry look on his face. I was like, that's just Brian. That's what Brian looks like all the time.
Yeah, when you told me that, I felt really bad. Like, I was really upset that he would think that.
Yeah.
And he said that he knows that that's just entertainer face, I think is what he said.
Because he's thinking about it.
Oh, bored. Said you give bored face. A lot of performers do, including him. Yeah, but no, I was.
I know how that feels. So when I'm watching somebody who's like looking at me to see my reaction, I give like proud parent face.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot
of... it's important to give that energy back.
Yeah.
If you don't give a fuck.
A lot of people, yeah, I think that I just have like a phase where I might just look like I'm not enjoying myself, but I am. And I try to like clap as much as possible because I know like that's important. And...
You're like a sociopath.
Yeah.
I smile because I know humans like smiles.
Well, what I do is when there's a car accident and, well, the other day there was a car accident and there was a... the meat in the car had died. And so I looked at the people who were looking at the meat and they were sad that this thing had died. So I looked at their faces and then I went home and I practiced in the mirror what it looks like to be upset. And that's what I do.
So what did you talk about with Peaches?
Weight loss.
It was what,
Jeff, and like, I was like, and I
that
talked
was to, what you talked about of all the things.
I talked with Peaches and Mink Stoll. I talked
about losing weight.
I talked about well, like, because I also like, because I'm not into, I haven't really watched any John Waters movie. I think I had seen Serial Mom, but like I didn't know Mink Stoll, so like I wasn't.
You haven't
like,
seen Pimp Flamingos or Female Trouble?
I don't think I've.
You would
seen,
love those
I've
movies.
Seen clips of all of them. And Peaches, Peaches and Mink Stoll, like, it was a great show for someone who wasn't me and my girlfriend Mary. We neither of us had seen these movies, and they showed like great scenes that really got you like understanding what it was. So, like, I highly recommend going to Idol Worship if it comes to your town, whoever's listening to this.
It was a sold out show here in Chicago.
Yeah. And it was great. And, yeah, I just talked about how I had eaten almost an entire bag of Wheat Thins the night before. And
vomited them out.
And Mink Stoll was, yes. And then puked them up because I got to keep my girlish figure. Just how you have to just cut stuff down. And Mink agreed. Mink was like, oh, yeah. She was really cool. Peaches was awesome. I recommend both of them. go talk to them about
eating.
Do
you want to do a podcast with Peaches?
I would, very much.
What are you guys going to talk about together?
Movies, I assume. I don't know. Pop culture in general.
But is there one specific film that you guys want to get into?
Maybe. Sure. We can discuss that.
Peaches, are you listening, honey?
Peaches, can you hear me?
She's super busy this summer, so I don't know if it'll happen, but we're all busy, like, doing all these projects and stuff.
I really like, because Peaches, when she was last on your show, like, I like that she really talks about movies in specific ways and not just like, that was good, I liked it because of this.
She's like, a very generous guest. You know, some people are just like, I'm here to promote the, you know, this and I'm out of here, you know. And it's, and to me it's like, I really do appreciate her taking time out of her ridiculously packed schedule to really sit down, slow things down, and really think deeply about something.
Yeah, and I like her theories about stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was some theories that I disagreed with too, or that I would like to at least have like discussions about. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but also, yeah, there's a lot of things.
Brian disagree with somebody about something?
Yes.
That's weird.
Yes.
You're such an agreeable person.
It was something actually about, I think, about drag. I can't remember exactly what it was. It was something, and that maybe wasn't about drag. I think it might have been about, it was something about film and mm-hmm. something about drag in film or gay stuff in film. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something where I was like, it wasn't like, that's bullshit. It was just like, I think it's more this, just something of not like you're wrong. It was more just like something like, oh, that would be an interesting, I'd like to have a discussion about that. It's because like I have thoughts on that as well.
What's like a movie that you're obsessed about that you always keep thinking about, or, you know, that you always enjoy like watching over and over again that not everybody else is so into? Like for me, the film Xanadu with Olivia Newton-John is so off the rails crazy. And it's Gene Kelly. It's like the last thing Gene Kelly did mm-hmm. before. And that movie killed him, you know?
Well, yeah. No, wait. Because he was around for Paula Abdul, like, because there's a picture, because Paula Abdul,
he did the Two Steps Forward. He was involved in that MC Scat Cat.
Yeah.
Somehow.
He was into a lot of scat stuff.
two steps forward.
Yeah, but there's a picture of like Paul Abdul on Gene Kelly's lap, and he's all old, but you know he had a fucking raging rock hard boner.
It's like, ooh, you're a dance legend.
Yeah, straight up, baby. Let me tell you, opposites attract. Cold-hearted snake.
See, that's all you got to do if you're on Snatch Game. You could be like Gene Kelly and just be like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I'd be like, Moses supposes he wants to fuck Paul Abdul.
So
yeah. Gotta fuck.
People don't like it when you sing.
What?
One guy was like, I love Brian Sweeney, but don't let him sing.
One guy said
I said, sing more, Brian.
One guy said sing that more. He liked it when we sing Les Mis.
He did.
Yeah, it was on Twitter. He said, I love Brian Sweeney, and I like it more when he sings Les Mis or some shit.
More.
Or something.
One day more.
one day.
So what movie would you like feel like is really important for
R. Marquez says, any episode of Feast of Fun with Brian Sweeney is my fave, but if they sing Les Mis, then it's the best ever.
Oh, that's
And then
so
he wrote
sweet.
Hashtag spoilers, because he spoiled that we sang Les Mis.
Spoilers?
One more day to revolution. We will nip it in the bud.
So what was the movie that you feel that you keep going to asking questions over and over time again? What is that movie for you guys? I know that a lot of our listeners, Showgirls is one of those movies. Certainly, you know, a movie that people love is Mean Girls. That has Lindsay Lohan in it. They just quote that endlessly.
Yes. There's a movie starring Joanna Angel where she has, it's in Hanukkah, and it's the Hanukkah eight-man gangbang of Joanna Angel, and eight men have sex with her and then come all over her, and that's probably the one that I think of the most.
Goodness!
Yes, the Joanna Angel
movie.
That's
not a porn.
Oh, not a porn. Oh, you mean like a real boring movie? Oh, God.
Infinity War?
Infinity War. There's a lot of movies.
Well, there's like one movie that you just feel like, you know, whenever you're like have a cold or you're...
The movies that I like quote the most probably are Wayne's World and Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but that's just because of my age, I feel. But...
That Ferris Bueller's Day Off is a very efficient film. Like, it never stops having great scenes one right after another.
Yes. And yeah, and it's like there's those lines in that movie you can just put toward anything in any every moment in life.
I would say it's John Hughes's greatest film.
Yes, I would think so. Clerks is another one that I think of a lot and talk about a lot. And Clerks and Chasing Amy, both Kevin Smith movies. The Evil Dead trilogy. There's a lot. Like, I love movies, TV shows.
I love that
stuff.
The principal in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
You love this.
Wound up to be this like child porn guy is in jail now.
Yeah,
he was a real life creep.
Hanging out,
the father from Beetlejuice.
He and Pee Wee Herman or Paul Rubens like were. It was like the same thing, but because Paul Rubens had like a bunch of pictures of naked boys, but he said it was like kitsch or something.
So with Paul Rubens getting arrested, Paul Rubens collects a lot of old shit, and he had a collection of Victorian, Victorian greeting cards.
Yeah.
So these are cards that were like sent in the mail back in the day, and they were, you know, drawings.
Yeah, nothing.
Naked children.
I don't think anything came about it. Just
and so the police were
strange.
Like, "This is child pornography," and I'm like, "These are things that you know the British Postal Service said it was okay to you know mail to each other in the 1800s. What is it? When was the Victorian era? 1600s, 1800s.
Back when they used to like probably rogering boys.
Yeah. So
buggering
in the 1800s. Yeah,
boy so. Buggery.
Followed by the Edwardian era, preceded by the Regency era.
Oh, yes, quite. We stopped buggering boys around then, I tell you.
What do you think is the day that, like, drag disappears or Drag Race goes... inevitably, Drag Race will go off the air.
Well, that's also, like, a problem with the fact that drag seems so stagnant, or dragnant. Hey, dragnant.
Ooh.
Is that, like, I don't know of anything that's... revolutionized, because it seems to have stopped at like Divine, and like there's not a lot of.
I think RuPaul moved drag forward. How can you say that she didn't?
Yes. Okay. There's RuPaul and Divine, yeah. And that's.
Dame Edna certainly had her impact.
Every single person that you're saying is over 30 years ago that this happened.
Well, I think Bianca Del Rio is definitely doing something innovative, and if she, obviously she's going to continue, it's going to grow into something really exciting.
I agree. I'm just...
She's definitely a queen to watch, and she has an enormous following. She's commercially, ridiculously successful. She's probably the wealthiest drag queen next to RuPaul.
I agree with all these, and what I was saying was that, before I was rudely interrupted, no, before, what I was saying was, yeah. I don't know of anyone aside from RuPaul that is thought of as like the person to go to. It's still, it seems like Divine and RuPaul are the drag queens.
But pop music is the same way today.
That's not true, because there's Ariana Grande and Beyonce, like, but I'm saying like. For mainstream, like I don't know who the person that if there's a drag thing, it would still be RuPaul is the person who like is the ambassador of drag. And that is kind of scary when you think about what happens when RuPaul, like what if RuPaul got, what if RuPaul disappeared? What if Thanos snapped his fingers and RuPaul disappeared? Who would be the person to take the RuPaul? Like who is there? And that's weird.
Well, there would be an emptiness, as you know, when Divine died, there was an emptiness, and when Michael Jackson died, there was an emptiness.
Yes, but people were still, there's Michael Jackson, and people could still come in and be part. I'm not saying because of how big like they are, there was still a bunch of R&B pop stars that Michael Jackson had been away for a long time when he died, but like what I'm saying is like who would be the person to carry the drag torch that would be able to like walk between worlds of like the mainstream and the drag world. And that's like a scary thing to think of is like, I don't know of anyone, the younger generation. There's no one that I know of that is like the person that people would look at in the way that like when RuPaul CoverGirl came out, Worker Girl Supermodel, came out, like, she was drag, that was Ru, and it was like, you know, she's actually a dude, and it's like, what? And I remember like that was not clear that it was there, that's a guy. There was still people like being like, really? Because
even her voice is like CoverGirl.
Yeah.
You know, like,
well, but because
it's not like CoverGirl,
because she served fish, as you people say. And so
don't say it in front of Mick Stoll.
No, I don't like it. Why? She doesn't like serving fish.
Well, it's very interesting because, you know, she's said all these outrageous things, and then I was just like, you know, say, I was like, oh yeah, I served really fish, and she's like, don't ever say that in front of me.
Yeah, I hate a lot of, it's a big problem I have with drag is how fucking misogynistic there's so much. But anyway,
what?
Okay. what? Just because we're saying that vaginas smell like fish? How is that misogynistic, us men saying that? anyway, but that's not what I was going to say. Yeah. What I'm talking about is like, who is the one, like, once they go away? Like, say, like, Robert Downey Jr. leaves Marvel Universe, putting it in Brian Sweeney terms, there's still like a bunch of other people and franchises that can take up the mantle if the major Avengers leave.
Mm-hmm.
There's still Guardians of the Galaxy, Peter Parker, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, like all those people coming up. It seems strange that Doctor Strange, it seems weird that RuPaul is probably nearing 60 around now, like, and I'm probably looking at the wrong side of 50, as they used to say. It's strange that like there isn't someone that is coming up, and it felt like
that's the thing is like RuPaul has to talk about how old she is, and she's only like, you know, 5 years older than Mark. It's like,
well, that's,
she's,
I mean,
like, I'm so old.
That's why,
you
we
know, and we're like,
that's why you traded Mark in for the Brian Sweeney,
the
new
model, the faster model.
Hello, that's why those two little kids, you were like, you want to host a podcast? We need young blood.
I don't think so.
Can we play with your dog, sir?
Sir, can we play with your dog? We want to remind the listeners that Feast of Fun is made possible because of financial support of generous, fabulous people like you.
Not shaving gives me more time for misbehaving.
I think that you want to take your wallet right now and empty the contents into an envelope and send it to 5315 North Clark Street, number 242, Chicago, Illinois, 60640, or make a one-time donation at feastoffun.com/donate. Or even better yet, become a premium subscriber and support the show every month and access all the shows. You want to do this. I don't think you want to step away from your computer. Go to feastoffun.com/plus, or otherwise, terrible things will happen. I'll be very cross.
You're a bald man.
You're a very bad man.
That's not the same. You're a very bad man.
No, that's Billy Mummy in the Twilight Zone.
It's a wonderful life. No, it's a good life.
It's a good life.
Billy Mummy.
And, you know, they redid that for the Twilight Zone movie with a little kid who is omnipotent.
And they did a sequel to it in the
Simpsons
2004 Twilight Zone show with Forrest Whitaker. And it was all right. Whatever.
What do they? How did they change it with the Forrest Whitaker version?
They didn't change it. They had Bill Mumy come back.
Oh, wow. As an old guy?
Yeah.
He was still omnipotent?
Yeah, but he had, like, kids of his own now or some shit.
And the kids were also omnipotent? And so they argued each other?
Yeah, and the mom was there.
Reality kept switching on and off like a light switch?
Something like that. I can't remember.
I want it to be day. No, I want it to be night.
And he turns that one guy into a Jack-in-the-Box, and you just see the shadow. That's so
well, disturbing. I like the version where the school teacher's like, you're really angry. You know, she's just like, acknowledge his distress at being omnipotent. And she's like, let's leave this.
That was what Spielberg, that was the Spielberg version, the one where Spielberg, no, that wasn't Spielberg. Wait, maybe it was. No, that was Joe Dante, I think. Spielberg directed the kick the can with the old guy, old people.
Yeah.
We're going to play kick the can, and then my dick will get hard again.
I feel young.
I'm going to have sex with a woman.
It was like
a woman again.
Ozzie Davis and shit. My balls don't fall in the toilet anymore when I sit down.
I got teeth in my mouth.
Ooh, baby.
Ah, party time. Give me that can.
I'm going to kick that can, boy.
Brian, it's so nice to have this kind of a quiet moment here with you.
And yes, it's nice to get away from it all.
And
just talk about the Twilight Zone movie, the Vic Morrow story that opens the movie. That's where he died.
Who died?
Vic Morrow. He got chopped up in the helicopter in real life.
Oh, my God, that's
right. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's John Landis.
I thought that the movie started with the guy who's like, he's an ambulance driver or something. He's telling the story.
It starts out with Albert Brooks and Dan Aykroyd driving, and then Dan Aykroyd's like, you want to see something really scary?
Yeah.
And they have
it's a midnight but that's, special.
And then Burgess Meredith is the narrator. And he's like, wah, wah, wah.
The penguin.
Batman, I got an umbrella that shoots shit.
Rocky,
yeah,
he's a lot of people. He's the penguin. He's Mickey from the Rocky, and he's Jack Lemmon's father from Grumpy Old Men, and where he's all horny. And there's a part where they're looking out the window and they see Walter Matthau going to Aunt Margaret's house, and he goes, "Looks like he's gonna take the old skin boat to Tuna Town." And in the second movie, he hits on Sophia Loren, and he goes, "Come back to my house. I'll show you my man-sized manicotti."
Brian, people can follow you at... it's no longer Brian's Dong on Twitter.
It's at the Brian Sweeney, Sweeney. I don't know. Sure, follow
me. I like Brian's Dong.
I know, funny. I'm sorry.
But you went mainstream and shit.
I'm a lot like Drag Race. I'm no longer transgressive.
Gee, thanks, Brian.
I'm just boring. I wonder how many people are going to hate this episode because the new Darren is on the show. I'm the new Mark. Hello.
Bring back Mark Felian. He was sweet and kind. This guy talks about porn, twin porn.
This show has a lot of cum on it now. More so than usual. It's usually subtext that cum.
Oh, I know. You can follow us on Instagram, Feast of Fun, on YouTube. You can watch Bianca Del Rio and Lady Bunny on YouTube. Just go to our Feast of Fun channel.
You think she's ever going to do Cooking with Drag Queens?
I don't know. You know what? She's asked her manager about it twice. Because I know, because they asked me, like, what was involved in it.
You had, like, a cup up next to the door, just listening.
Well, this is the weird thing, is, like, you know, when drag queens, like, ask other drag queens, like, should I do Feast of Fun? No. Then it always comes back to me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, we know exactly, like, who's, like, bad-mouthing us or, like, or says really great things about us and stuff like that. And, you know, 99% of them all just say great things about...
Who's the 1%?
Oh, they shall not be named.
Wall Street. All the Wall Street drag queens.
Even Tyra Sanchez likes us, you know?
Even her.
She's fighting with everybody right now.
Not so. Me.
Not with you.
I hope not. Let's start a beef, Tyra.
But I do sense, like, you know, drag queens, like, there is an undercurrent of, like, frustration and anger at that their careers or their paths as artists is not going as they want it to. And instead of sort of, like, asking what I can do to be better, they turn to somebody else and blame it on them. So they're like, you know, RuPaul is discriminatory because I haven't been booked on RuPaul's Drag Race, or we're somehow getting in their way, or because we said something, or, you know, and to me, it's like, listen, you know, we live in a great time right now. You have infinite choices, and, you know, a lot of people are very receptive to voices and to individuals that weren't heard 10 years ago, even. And it's a really great time to be alive, and there's really amazing art being made, and you have every tool in your box right now to make amazing shit. So if anything I can let people know is that you're ready. You're ready to go. You're ready to do this. That's why I said to Kim Chi before she was frustrated because she had been auditioning for Drag Race and not getting on. I said, you have everything you need right now to win Drag Race. There's nothing wrong about you. You're a fantastic artist. You have a very sweet demeanor. And if anything, I would say just, you know, stay humble and stay grounded. And she completely ignored everything I said. But she's an amazing artist. You know?
The best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The second best time is right now.
Thank you so much for that, Brian.
That's a Chinese proverb, I believe.
I thought you wrote that on the spot.
I tried. I can't write Chinese.
Thanks for the fortune cookie, Brian. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Feast of Fun members.